We're back on Canucks Central. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah in the Mobile Kintech studio. No, the Canucks have not just scored a goal, but they are preparing the goal song for tonight's matchup against the Philadelphia Flyers. If you can hear that in the background, we are at Rogers Arena ahead of game night here at the rink. And Canucks trying to get into the win column for the first time this year. The Flyers are playing their first game of the season. That means you get a Matvei Michkov debut. We'll get more into the game as we get closer to puck drop with our pre-pregame show at 5:30 and also the full pregame coming up at 6 o'clock. It is a Friday, though. It's time to get for your questions, the mailbag. Still absolutely loving the mailbag music.
That's good.
Good vibes, man. Good vibes.
I did see some concerns about the intro music, like our regular show intro music, but I feel like it's so ingrained at this point that it's like part of the show and I can't change it.
The intro music?
Yeah, like the one we use off the top.
Oh, I mean, the only complaints I get is like for the open.
Yes.
They're like, what is the open?
Oh, yeah.
What does that even
There's
mean?
There's a few people that are like, why is it golf related?
People are very confused about the open.
Say.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense to Josh. He may have galaxy brained it, but it makes sense to Josh.
So to explain it, the open is the opening segment of the show.
Yeah.
It's also a golf tournament, the Open.
Yeah, very good.
And in the clip, there's some golf music, and then there's
a sound
of a puck hitting a post. That's hockey.
Yeah.
And then Happy Gilmore brings it all together, hockey and golf. That was the thought.
Yeah.
But you know what? I'm not changing it.
Yeah.
Well,
it's too late.
Maybe we need a new producer to change it.
Our intro isn't good enough. We need a new producer.
The thing with Josh is, though, it's good. Like, he made a layered opening. Like, you can study this in university. It's like, the open. What does this mean? What does it signify?
There's entendre.
He's like the Banksy of producers.
Yeah.
No, I love it. It's the open. And it's there. We give you our take on the Canucks.
And maybe a little confusion is
instead
good.
We didn't want to just call it the lead like everybody else.
Yeah.
So we gave it a fun name, like the open.
Anyway, first question for the mailbag, which has undisputed great music. Ernest from Richmond, how much differently do the forwards have to play with the Forbort and Desharnais pair on the ice while still maintaining a fast transitional game that Tocchet wants?
Well, that would be, given what we saw in game one, maybe difficult to have the fast transition game that Tocchet wants. But generally, like, you know, on the near side, you're going to need more puck support. The forwards might have to come down a little bit lower to be closer to the puck and allow for the breakout. I mean, guys, it's not, as we talked about the other day, other guys have to do their jobs too. And it wasn't just Desharnais making the mistakes.
Yeah, I don't know if they need to be babysat to that degree. To me, it's just be available as an outlet.
Yeah.
That's it. Just be available. If you're available, they can find you. I mean, I understand that they may have a hard time beating guys when they're under a lot of duress and they're not going to make moves past guys and make these incredible, breathtaking, you know, seeing eye passes. But these are NHL caliber defensemen.
Yes.
If you have a lane, an open lane, and an outlet, they'll make the pass. So, like, I don't even think they need to do anything too crazy. Just be available.
Yeah.
If they're available, they'll be able to find you. Unless we're talking about some, like, cross-ice, you know, sauce that needs to happen or whatever. But generally speaking, just be available as an outlet. And that's whether it's the guy who's playing low, forward low, whether it's the center, who's kind of making that pop play. You see oftentimes he'll pop in right to the space between the goalpost and the boards, just kind of in between, right before the trapezoid line, and they're usually available for a quick pop pass, and then the other guy who's up by the blue line usually, right? So those guys be available. You saw oftentimes the other night, guys weren't in their spots, and then you're forcing Desharnais and Forbort into having to hold on to the puck, and they're not going to make great plays. So yeah, just be available.
Well, and the one thing is, like, playing a faster transition game isn't necessarily just about cheating and trying to blow the zone. We saw Nashville do that a little bit last year, and certainly in the playoffs against Vancouver, they might send, you know, the far guy on the far side quickly out of the zone if they feel like they're going to be able to get a pass out there. But generally, it happens by being able to execute your breakouts in the same way that other teams do.
Yeah.
Next one comes from Mike the Urologist. How confident is management in their current defensive core? Put another way, how many trades does this management team think it needs to make for them to be happy with their defensive lineup?
How many trades?
So basically, how many pieces away on defense are they?
I think you're a top four piece away. Like, if you consider, and I do, Carson Soucy to be essentially a top four defenseman,
yeah,
a guy that can play second pair minutes, you are a top four. You're one guy away because you have third pair guys. And also, third pair guys aren't tremendously hard to find. It's more about finding that other top four guy.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that. I think Myers is probably best as a number like five.
Yeah.
I think Myers is an excellent five. Honestly, I do. Because he can play top 4 minutes if need be. If you're playing a fewer minutes, I think you get the best out of him anyways. So I think that's a perfect spot for him to be. It's a number 3-4. Is Soucy better as a four than a three, perhaps, right?
Yeah.
I'd love to get a number three. Heck, I'd love for number two even. Why not have, you know, one and two twos? Like, I'd love to have that, right? But in terms of what's realistic, I think they can probably get a number 3-4. And there's a player who people are asking us about, which I'm sure we'll get to. So I'm not going to, you know, get into that player right now specifically because he's going to be asked about a lot. But there are a couple guys on the market that fit that bill. May not be cheap to get them, but there are. And I think you're right. On the blue line, it's kind of one guy. Sure, would you like to have two and even upgrade on somebody else? Of course. But how many of those moves can you truly make? How much space do you have to make those moves? And how much do you really truly need to spend all those assets on the second move? You know what I mean? So I think it's really one legitimate top four guy.
Next one comes from, let's move on to these two. Woodrow the Eligible Bachelor, would you rather have the Canucks trade for Rasmus Anderson or Timothy Liljegren? And I assume the context here obviously is it would cost a lot to trade for Anderson, would not cost nearly as much to trade for Liljegren.
Yeah, Anderson, I mean, the cost is going to be expensive. It's a first round pick, it's a prospect, and it'll be a roster player.
Yeah.
That's going to be the price, right?
Yeah.
For Rasmus Anderson. And considering he has another year left at $4.5 million, I think that's a nice number. I think it fits in perfectly for them and even buys a little bit of time to not have to rush Verlander next season either, that he can take his time, perhaps come over and play in the AHL, let him really cook and bring him along slowly without high expectations. And then you can make a decision. Do you keep Rasmus Anderson or not? But it's going to be a lot to pay for a player you're going to have maybe for only a year and a half. And then you're going to have to give a guy in his 30s a massive contract. Because Rasmus Anderson is going to be $8, $9 million defenseman. Like, that's good. That's what he's going to get, especially with the cap going up in a couple of years when he's a free agent. Whether you think he's worth it or not, that's what he's going to get. I'm not sure I'm there yet on giving up all that for him.
Yep.
He's the most obvious player out there. He'd improve their blue line tremendously. I'm just not sure I'm there yet in terms of wanting to give up what it takes. Because it may have to cost, like, a Verlander type. You know, and is Vancouver doing that? Not sure. They're not trying like Romacki either, I don't think. So
no.
It's going to be expensive.
Anderson is a finishing piece, though. You know, especially for this roster, I think I would view Rasmus Anderson as the kind of piece that puts you over the top and puts you into a cup contention conversation, mm-hmm. given the forward group that this team has.
Yeah.
Right, and Timothy Liljegren for sure, I like him. I think that's a player I would certainly be interested in exploring the options of trying to make it work here in Vancouver. I know that there are warts in his game. I know that for even what he is, the physicality hasn't been there. Lots of coaches, numerous coaches, haven't been able to trust him in postseason situations.
Yeah.
So there's a lot there that needs to be worked on. Whereas Anderson, like, you parachute this guy in and maybe you play him next to Quinn Hughes, maybe you play him next to Carson Soucy, it doesn't really matter. You've now got among the top, you know, the best top four Ds in the league.
Yeah. Is your next question about who else would you target?
There's a lot of questions about, but I can do, let's do that.
Because Hank the Tank is asking that. I know a lot of other people are asking that as well.
Yeah, so Austin and Langley had one too. Who are some realistic right defenseman targets for the deadline? Anderson is one. who else would be interesting? Is there anyone that could be the Canucks version of Matthias Ekholm?
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm not – the Ekholm type, I think, is very hard to find on the right side. Do you have somebody that you see on the right side outside of Rasmus Anderson who kind of fits that bill that might be available?
Not the Ekholm type. I mean, there's just – you know, he's not going to be available. Aaron Ekblad.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, know. I don't think he fits – like,
he doesn't
fit
the bill because he's not getting traded.
No,
right?
I mean, I think the only guy I look at is Damon Severson with the – Columbus Blue Jackets.
Right.
We know their blue line. They have Juracek coming. There's been a lot going on with that team. They have Werenski as well. They signed him to a long-term contract. He had his struggles as well last year, but he kind of fits the bill like Ekholm too, because Ekholm also had some struggles where the team was struggling. He wasn't at his best, and now you see where he's at. I think that's the closest. He has a longer-term deal as well. I think 5 or 6 years left on that deal. There were some rumblings the Canucks had a level of interest in him when he was available, and the Devils traded his rights to the Blue Jackets, you know, a year ago, and they ended up signing him to an extension. He fits that bill, righty defenseman, but that's a pretty big contract to take on, right? To answer the other questions about other defensemen, on the left side, the one guy I keep an eye on would be Mike Matheson. They're familiar with him. You know, it depends where Montreal feels like it's at, but a couple years, it's not going to be cheap, but he kind of fits the mold of can do a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
And that's what they like here. And Matheson's a player, of course, that this front office knows very well from their time in Pittsburgh.
It's like a lot of the guys, unfortunately, are on the left side, which is what made this summer and all the right side to D that were actually unrestricted free agents this summer sort of interesting. But, you know, people are going to – I mean, Montreal has been trying to inflate the price of David Savard for how long? You know what I mean? Like, do you have any interest in David Savard as a deadline rental type of piece?
Honestly, if you're getting him dirt cheap, sure. If you can't get – if you strike out on the other options
– But, like, last year they were wanting a first-round pick for him.
Well, you're not
deadline.
Doing that. No, yeah. I'm saying, like, the only way I do David's – I trade for a guy like Savard is if it's cheap.
Yeah.
Yeah, third-round pick, something along those lines, okay, sure.
One guy I would be, and it's still a lefty, but one guy I think fits the bill, but he's just a rental. I don't know what it would look like to re-sign him, would be Gavrikov if he becomes, if LA season goes down the toilet.
It's him, and then you look at the Capitals, too. What are they going to do with Jacob Chychrun, for instance?
Yeah.
Where is their team going to be at? Somebody texted in Siegenthaler. He's another guy to keep an eye on. I think it all depends on where the teams are going to be at, and I think that's why we have to wait a little bit longer. The reason I brought up the two guys I brought up is we're not expecting Columbus to be anywhere.
Yep.
So Severson would fit the mold of an Ekholm type, has more term, Ekholm type, on the right side. And as much as Montreal has some aspirations, is Matheson a guy they're going to keep beyond the next year or two? And what can you get for him around the deadline? And somebody texted in and said, no way after he body slammed PD. I'm like, that was, you know, a long time ago. You can forgive and forget when it comes to things like that over time.
That was eons ago.
Next one kind of plays into it still. Rager, would you guys risk moving the future right-handed defenseman in Tom Wilander for a right now piece? Rager mentions righty and Rasmus Anderson. Obviously, we've talked about him. Let's just make it a right now piece that fits the window of the next 1 to 3 years. Would you move Tom Wilander for that?
I mean, in the Anderson scenario, it makes sense, does it not? Because you would have Hronek and Anderson. I mean, assuming you have Anderson for this, the rest of this year and next, probably sign him to another contract after that. Like, your top 4D are then locked up for super long term.
Myers is still on a contract, too.
And Myers is still on.
I mean, your blue line's figured out.
Yeah. So it's like Tom Wilander becomes he comes surplus to requirements.
Yeah, it depends. Depends on how you view. I mean, if you have Veronica Sanderson signed long term, then yes.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure personally. I feel at this moment, again, you can ask me again in a few months. I want to see how Wilander plays this year or two. You can always change your mind with more information. I'm not at a point yet where I feel comfortable trading him for Rasmus Anderson. Mm-hmm. If I'm trading Wilander currently as we sit here today, I prefer it to be somebody who's in their mid-20s. Because I do think it is important for them to have somebody they can bridge beyond another year or two.
Like, yeah.
I agree with Rager that the next 2 to 3 years are big for the window. I don't think that's it, though.
Yeah.
And I do think with the level of high-end talent they have. And if a Lekkerimäki comes through and a couple of these guys come through, you can extend this window beyond just the next 2 or 3 years. And I'm very careful sacrificing much more beyond the next 2 or 3 years to ensure you have something this year and next.
Asking about Adam Larsson. Adam Larsson recently signed an extension with Seattle, so he is off the table, off the board.
Did Will Borgen also recently?
No, Will Borgen is a free agent, so he would be a name that you can...
Let's Borgen it up. That's big sky.
I like Borgen.
Yeah.
I like Borgen too, but is he similar to what the Canucks already have?
Yeah.
In a 4-5-6 type?
Yeah, I mean... Can he be better than Myers?
Mm-hmm.
But also he hasn't been a guy to play 20 minutes high leverage situations and excel consistently. Like, he's had some good moments. He had really good moments last year, but you're making a projection. But again, I think that would be reflected in the cost, whereas it may not be cheap getting Borgen, but it's not necessarily going to cost you, I don't think, Willander in a first.
Next one comes from Magister Danielson. How long does Daniel Sprong play on Elias Pettersson's wing?
I don't know. Putting a timeline on it would be weird. I think it's forever going to be a bit of a revolving door.
Yeah.
Like, to me, Sprong is... The question is framed the opposite of the way that I think, in that this isn't a fixated situation. Obviously, you have DeBrusque and Pettersson right now. They are the guys. And then Sprong is the third guy on that line. If he plays well, if he scores goals, he'll stick there. If he doesn't, they might try Sherwood there. They'll probably put Höglander on the left side and move DeBrusque over to the right. They'll try some different things. But ultimately, I don't think there is... Like, to me, Sprong isn't stapled to that wing.
Yeah. Next one, it comes from this one, Sam and Lake Cowichan. Do you think it was a mistake giving away two really good defensemen in the Lindholm trade since they need defensemen so bad?
They're longer-term defensemen. Like, we're counting Yermo?
That was surprising to me. I think they're talking Brustevich, and I'm trying to find who the Flames picked with their second.
Oh, okay, so the pick. Again, like, the second pick is what, the third?
No, they selected selected a forward.
Yeah, they took Gradin. Yeah. So, yeah, if we're talking about Yermo being a really good defenseman, I think we might be going overboard a little bit. But Brustevich, I think some people are maybe still upset about, and obviously a first-round pick. So I guess let's rephrase the question. Do you think it was a mistake giving away one really good defenseman or one high-upside defenseman in the Lindholm trade since they need defensemen so badly?
No.
I mean, it all depends. Like, if Brustevich looks, if he's a great defenseman long term, it'll look back in hindsight, it won't look good.
Yeah.
I mean, that's going to be true, right? You can look at it and say that. But I'm not quite sure that any of those guys were going to help or will help this team the next 2 or 3 years anyways. Like, I think Brustevich is a ways away. I know he's very talented, and he mesmerized with his skills during preseason, and fans really like what they've seen. But when it comes to playing the game defensively, there are a lot of questions. And he has a long way to go before he gets to the level he needs to get to. And he's going to be tantalizing, but he's going to take some time. So I'm just very careful on overreacting when it comes to these guys right now.
Yeah. I look back at the circumstances of where the Canucks were when they made the Lindholm trade. You're in first place in the division. Everything's going right. You're fairly healthy at that point. Right?
Well, and they were clearly a top six forward short, too. They needed somebody else.
Yeah.
It was a huge need.
You needed another top six forward. You wanted a right shot center to add to the group. And so Lindholm was the big piece. Now, I know it's just a rental, and it sucks paying the price that you had to pay for that rental. But ultimately, the Canucks, with that trade, put themselves in a cup contender type of status for last year. And as we've talked about, of course, ifs, ands, buts, whatever. Every team has their ifs, ands, or whats that happen over the course of the year. But you're not anticipating your Vezina-caliber goaltender going down.
Yeah.
And a guy who's on a 100-point pace forgetting how to play hockey for the final 3 months of the season.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm hyperbolizing the way Pettersson finished the season, but, you know, he was on a tear. He was one of the players of the month in January, and then they come back from the All-Star break, and he looked like he was Space Jam, like somebody stole his talent.
Yeah.
You know, so it's you weren't expecting that when you took the Lindholm trade, and that's not things you would – maybe an injury, you can, you know, forecast that into your future potentially, but Pettersson just not playing to the level that he was playing at for – I mean, the last 18 months prior to that, it just, you know, that's something that you could not have accounted for. So I find it hard to do this revisionist history in like 3 years from now, if Brustevich looks like a pretty good defenseman, be like, oh, the Canucks should have never made that trade. I don't know. They felt like they were going for the Stanley Cup when they obviously had a chance to really make a cup push in the Western Conference.
Next one from Kenny. Why are you getting so upset with Canucks fans who overreact?
Me?
I'm probably specifically
this is
you.
Definitely on Sat.
About the post-game show stuff, right? Somebody was asking.
Did you get mad?
I mean, I didn't get mad. I mean, yeah, I guess like, you know, but we know how it is. Like we're performers.
Sat doesn't get mad. He like scolds like a parent.
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, I get a little worked up.
Scary.
Yeah, I get a little worked up sometimes. But I mean, I wasn't mad. I was more disappointed. I was more bewildered by the level of PD discourse. Like I said, I don't care if you criticize him. That's fine. But it was text after text, call after call, and essentially saying, I mean, the last guy that called was like, we're never going to win with this guy. You got to trade him. He's not worth it. And others texting in and saying, it's a mistake. They signed him, and he's a horrible player. And all this stuff was coming. I'm like, it's game one of the season.
Yeah.
It's game one of the season. And I think, you know, as much as I'm here to listen to your takes, you have a right. You have a right to have a take. But I don't have to respect your take. I'm allowed to disagree with your take, right? So that's going to happen. And you're not always going to be coddled. Sometimes, you know, we'll go back and forth. But, yeah, the reason, you know, I was a bit bewildered was the level of angst and frustration and really overreaction. And it's fine. You can overreact. But, you know, I'm allowed to react to your overreaction.
Fair enough.
Does that settle it?
No, that's
fine. Am I being a jerk?
No, it's okay.
Am I the jerk here?
I actually something popped into my head from what we've been talking about. Sheldon saying it would be something else to watch Villander and Brustevich light the Canucks up from the back end in Calgary. If let's say Calgary is weighing offers for Rasmus Anderson, I'm not sure that they're going to be particularly valuing another right shot defenseman, being that they have Brustevich and. They just drafted Zane Parekh.
For sure. At the same time, though, like...
You take the best offer that's on the table?
Yeah, and you're in a position where, like, you probably have to do a lot of different things. But I'm with you. It may not be the perfect partner for them.
They might just prefer an offer that comes from another team that has a center on the table or whatever that other prospect might look
it's
like.
It's a good point. And if Anderson has a good year and the Flames are going to be trading him, it's going to be a bidding war.
Yeah.
It's going to be expensive. And it might be more expensive than people think because he's a right-handed defenseman who can play in every situation.
Yeah.
Next one from Jabo. What's worse, overreaction after the first game of the NHL season or the first game of the NFL season?
I think this is easy, isn't it?
It's very easy.
Yeah.
It's hockey.
It's definitely NFL.
I mean,
one season is 17 games, the other season is 82.
Okay. Let me throw it to you this way. If your team loses the first game of the NFL season and you look bad when you're expected to be good, I think people are more quick to jump on assuming that team is just bad now.
Yeah.
As opposed to in hockey, it's like, oh, like that was just a bad game. Whatever. Like you might have more of an overreaction after losing the opening game of an NFL season than you would an NHL season.
Yeah.
But overreacting in general, it's definitely worse to do it after the first game of an NHL season.
Yeah. And I don't think the overreactions on Pettersson are a continuation of what happened in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Not so much an overreaction about game one. I've actually felt most fans have been, at least in my mentions on Twitter or wherever else, even on the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox, like, good, they got punched in the mouth. This will be a good learning lesson for them. Mm-hmm. and it'll make us better for the rest of the season. Whereas, like, in the NFL, I mean, everybody was like, oh, my God, Kirk Cousins is terrible. He can't move. The Atlanta Falcons are done. They gave this guy $40 million. That, like, he's back to being Kirk Cousins.
Yeah,
he's fine.
Yeah.
He just had a bad game.
You know,
so it happens, but and the same thing goes for the NHL.
Justin in East Van, would you drink Diet Coke mixed with pickle juice and jalapenos? And this comes from a video of Dua Lipa. That's like her signature drink or something.
I would do a lot of things Dua Lipa does.
yeah, I mean, from that standpoint.
That's good advice. I don't know.
From that standpoint.
So if you, like, sit down at a table and with Dua Lipa and she, like, is pouring you this drink that she drinks on the regular, I
I'm
guess.
I'm trying it.
I mean, yeah. Of course I'm trying it.
I mean, I'm not against the concept of it. I'm skeptical that it's any good. But I will say, like, I really enjoy a jalapeno margarita,
ooh,
for instance.
It doesn't, it, like,
feels
it's not
like
too spicy for you?
It is.
It is?
It is, but it is spicy for me, but I still enjoy it. It's like the right amount, and like the salt helps out, like, and it's, you know, margaritas aren't huge, unless you get, like, you know, a massive one, but, you know, the jalapeno margarita, so, but that's different from...
That's a pretty far departure from like, Diet Coke and,
right?
Yeah.
So I'm not sure jalapeno and Diet Coke go together.
And pickle juice in there, too.
Pickle juice, too. I don't know about pickle juice.
It's strange, man.
Yeah.
But
some people have, I've seen them trying it online, and the reviews aren't great.
The reviews are not good?
No. Whatever floats your boat, though.
Mm-hmm.
Next, last one from Vicky. What is the worst or best bet you have made that you have lost or won? I know what mine is.
Well, yeah, eating an onion.
Eating an onion.
Yeah. Wasn't even a bet, necessarily. It was a bet with myself.
Yeah. Well, I made the bet with Eddie Lack that forced me into doing the one-chip challenge.
So. Oh, yeah, that's easily the worst one for you. Easily. I've never been a huge, like, bet guy.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if I can think of one off the top of my head that was, like, really bad.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if I've done anything overly embarrassing.
Yeah.
I don't like the whole embarrassing bet thing. Like, why? Like, why?
Add some stakes. It's fun.
Add money. that's fun.
We don't all operate in the SAT tax bracket.
I don't know about that. I'm just saying.
I did
even $5. Like, whatever. Just put money on the line.
I remember having a parlay years ago, and everything hit. Everything. And it was just like, and I was just like dabbling like small bets. And it was like, but it was a big parlay. It was like six things that had to hit. And the last thing was for Manchester United to beat Arsenal. It was like the heyday of Man U Arsenal, like Sir Alex Ferguson and Arsene Wenger are the coaches, right? And it's, you know, Thierry Henry and Ruud van Nistelrooy, like those kinds of studs on either side of the ball. And Ruud van Nistelrooy gets a penalty late in the game. It's 0-0. And at that point, like, van Nistelrooy is like one of the best strikers on the planet. This is automatic.
It's chalk.
I'm already celebrating. I've won the bet. And he missed.
Oh. Devastating.
Heartbreaker. That was a bad beat.
Tough break.
That's a tough beat.
That was a bad beat.
That's a bad beat. I mean, I have some bad.
As you can see, it's still.
Yeah, I have some bad like poker beats when I think about them back in the day, but I mean, I don't think they count.
Yeah. I mean, every bad beat counts. All right. That's it for...
Is that it?
That's it. That is it.
All right.
Canucks Central's Friday Mailbag. Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah, of course, producer Josh Elliott Wolf. All right. Coming up, we're going to get into the pregame as Alex Edler is honored tonight at Rogers Arena. We'll hear from the coach. We'll hear from the Eagle. And get you ready for the Philadelphia Flyers, the opponent tonight at Rogers Arena. That's coming up next on Canucks Central.